Welcome to Guerrilla Radio on CFUV 101.9 FM. And, you know, we're heard around the world in Shoutcast at cfuv.uvic.ca. Well, it's been touted as savior of the North American and Western world's energy crisis, indigenous, relatively clean-burning and abundant, natural gas. Its proponents claim it will be by turns ending dependence on imported oil and gas from increasingly fractious regions and make North America, again, an energy superpower. So what's the problem? Hydrological fracturing or fracking, the key to unlocking the pipe dreams of energy self-sufficiency and continuity of the Western economic model, is proving to be both a Pandora's box of hyperpollution and an unwelcome rerun of colonial practices against communities living above coveted resources. Carl Grossman is a multi-award-winning veteran journalist specializing in investigative reporting that all but lost art. He also teaches at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. He's also the author of several books, including Weapons in Space, The Wrong Stuff, The Space Program's Nuclear Threat to Our Planet, Power Crazy, Is Lilco Turning Shoreham into America's Chernobyl, and Cover Up, What You Were Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power. Carl, too, produces and hosts the television program Enviro Close Up, and his writing is regularly featured online at counterpunch.org, Common Dreams, and The Huffington Post, among others. Carl Grossman in the first half. And throughout the terrible years since the day that changed everything, a question posed is, where are our protest songs? With this last year and some odd proving the most restive period in the world since the late 1960s, seeing popular movements rising throughout Europe, the Middle East, and even here in North America, again, the oft-asked yet seldom-answered musical question is asked. But today we can respond. Following the folk tradition of such American greats as Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, and Phil Oakes, David Rovics has spent thousands of days gigging venues small and not so much so across the United States, Canada, and abroad. He's been a stalwart of the nascent Occupy movement, ringing out his prolific catalog of songs affirming peace, justice, and humanity, while never fearing to spotlight and excoriate the real evildoers of our times. He's also proven a populist pioneer of digital dissent, providing his 200-plus retinue of socially relevant songs for free to the masses through his website, davidrovics.com. David passed through Victoria Saturday and, true to form, performed at the demo vigil for Palestine and the again-blasted Gaza. David Rovics making available the song of protest to a new generation of malcontents in the second half. And Victoria Street News publisher and CFUV radio broadcaster Dean Bancroft will join us at the bottom of the hour to bring us news from the city streets and beyond. But first, Carl Grossman and hydrological fracturing's other toxic byproduct. Stick around. Well, welcome to the program, Carl.
A pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's my pleasure. Of course, now your home in New York State is a potential gold mine for energy producers lusting after the riches jealously guarded by the Marcellus Shale. What exactly is the Marcellus Shale, Carl, and why are so many New Yorkers and others opposed to opening it up to the frackers?
Well, the Marcellus Shale region covers much of upstate New York. And New York State is a very big state geographically. So we're talking about a lot of shale, a lot of territory, and a lot of environmental destruction and health consequences if this scheme to, on the largest of scales, do horizontal hydraulic fracturing of the shale in the Marcellus Shale region is allowed to happen.
Well, now we've heard a lot, and I mean, Gaslands, that great documentary, better than any that I've seen at least, really showed up a lot of the environmental problems with fracturing and the social problems as well. You know, the very famous scene of a guy in his kitchen putting a match to his tap, and the whole thing going up, blowing up almost in his face because of the gas in the water supply. I mean, that's not bad enough. But in an article published at Counterpunch, you highlight another environmental problem with this process that I'd never heard of. What is the other environmental concern here?
Well, the other, and it's some other, is that carcinogenic chemicals have been the main focus in terms of the destructive impacts, the the public health impacts of fracking. But in addition, what fracking does is let loose from the earth radioactive material, particularly something called radium-226, which has a half-life of 1,600 years. Half-life is the time it takes for a radioactive substance to lose half its radiation. So you multiply that by 10 to 20 to find its hazardous lifetime. So we're talking about, through fracking, radioactive poisons, particularly radium-226, which will be radioactive for, well, between 16,000 and 32,000 years. You let all that stuff out, and, I mean, the consequences are going to be just enormous in terms of health consequences. The big issue, and this this applies, of course, to the chemicals. Many of them are carcinogens that are used in the fracking process. But here you have this other huge element, that what happens with fracking is the release of radioactive substances, which will be around for millennia, causing, I mean, radium is a leading carcinogen, a huge cause of cancer, and that's what you would be unleashing from the ground on a massive scale if this massive fracking is allowed to go ahead.
Well, now, is this a process, this release of these of these radioactive elements, is that just is that specific to one area, or is that something that can be generalized to many areas, or perhaps all areas where this activity is carried out?
It varies. Some areas, the Marcellus Shale area in particular, they're just hot with radioactive substances, radon, radium, and so forth. Other areas are not. They're moderate or low. But in terms of Marcellus Shale, not low at all, very, very high.
And how is this, Carl, how is the radioactive material, how does it manifest? Is it like a gas, or is it, in what form does it get released?
Well, in varied form. Well, the radon is a gas. The radium is sort of like, it's a silvery white metallic substance, which would come up with the, carried up with the gas, carried up with the, this is a very violent process, fracking, mm-hmm. where millions of gallons of a chemically treated water are sent into the ground at enormously high pressure. And the idea is to release the gas, the natural gas is methane, which is captured in these shale formations. The problem is that, for starters, you're talking about some of these chemicals that are being used in fracking, as I note, being carcinogenic. But then when we come to the radioactive substances, what happens is when that captured gas gets out, is released, is unleashed, it comes up with the radioactive material. Which then, there's many pathways of that radioactive material to life, to people. Indeed, a very important report done on all this, and folks could, in your part of the hemisphere, could, through the computer, go look up the report. It was done by Grassroots Environmental Education, and it's an environmental group here on Long Island, where I live, and the report was done by an absolutely eminent scientist, a guy named Evan White, who worked for years. I'm sorry, Ivan White, who worked for years as a staff scientist for the National Council on Radiation Protection, which is an entity which is chartered by the U.S. Congress, and again. Folks could see the report, read the actual report itself on the website of Grassroots Environmental Action, which is grassroots.org. Actually, go to grassrootsinfo.org and read it. But let me just read a couple of lines from the report. Horizontal hydrofracking for natural gas in the Marcellus Shale region of New York State, says the report, has the potential to result in the production of large amounts of waste materials containing radium-226 and radium-228 in both solid and liquid mediums. Importantly, the type of radioactivity found in the Marcellus Shale and brought to the surface by horizontal hydrofracking is the type that is particularly long-lived and can easily bioaccumulate over time and deliver a dangerous radiation dose to potentially millions of people long after the drilling is over.
Yeah, well, anytime we're dealing with radioactivity, we're talking about it forever as far as humans are concerned. And as you said, Carl, this is a violent process, but cracking up the earth and providing these pathways for the gas to escape. But it's not very predictable either, is it? I mean, the people that are doing this, you know, they don't know how exactly the earth is going to crack and where those cracks might lead into water supplies. And even though they claim that it's below the water table, it seems to be happening if Gaslands is any indication. But Carl, I've always been curious. I mean, it's a process of highly pressurized liquid and water and these chemicals that the industry is loath to reveal what these chemicals are. But I wonder, why are the chemicals there at all? Wouldn't it be just as effective just to pressurize water? Why do you have to have all of these chemicals within the process? Do you know?
As I understand it, the chemicals are necessary with the water to uncouple the methane, the gas from the shale, that water alone somehow can't do it. And we're talking about huge, vast amounts, millions and millions of gallons in these fields. I mean, this is a basically new process. Yeah. I mean, horizontal shale fracturing was only developed in 2008. I mean, and now 4 years later, we're talking about not just Marcellus Shale and not just the United States, Canada, all over the world, this being some sort of huge source of new energy for the planet, not considering the consequences. A vertical, what they call vertical hydrofracking, that's been around for some time. And, I mean, there are indications with vertical hydrofracking about how dangerous it can be. I mean, the report that I mentioned by White that folks can get at the website of Grassroots Environmental Education, again, read it yourself. It's wow. There's a second report. This was done in October by the same organization, and it reports on 11, these are vertical hydrofracking wells in upstate New York in the Marcellus Shale region. And here I'm just reading from this report. Levels of total radium in the wastewater from 11 existing vertical gas wells in New York averaged 8,433 picocuries per liter. This figure exceeds by more than 1,000-fold, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's maximum contaminant level for drinking water, 5 picocuries per liter for combined radium-226 and radium-228. So you see, with vertical hydrofracking, the result in terms of water pollution with radioactive radium is like to the sky. Horizontal hydrofracking, I mean, this is agreed, is a will result in far, because it's horizontal and it goes on for far longer. The vertical wells just going straight down. The horizontal wells go and go horizontally, and it's agreed in the data that this other report that I note is based on a study by the U.S. Geological Survey, and it's agreed by all parties that horizontal wells, because of their extended length, will increase the releases of, and they call this NORM, N-O-R-M, which is naturally occurring radioactivity. It may be naturally occurring, but it's a threat to life. And in my view, it should be left there, this toxic stuff, in the ground and not be allowed to be unleashed from the earth through fracking. This is not at all any kind of proper energy solution.
Well, and again, your article is fracking and radioactivity, and I found it at counterpunch.org, and I put it up at my blog site for this show, the guerrillaradioblog.blogspot.com. And in it, you mentioned Grassroots Environmental Education, the organization that undertook this study, and their associate director, Doug Wood, he says, now, quote, and this is from your article, he says, quote, various disposal methods have been contemplated for the thousands of tons of radioactive waste expected to be produced by fracking, but none adequately protect New Yorkers from eventual exposure to this. I mean, what are we going to do then? We're creating another huge radioactive waste stream. We don't know what to do with what we get out of the nuclear plants as it is. Why is the EPA not demanding some sort of end destination for this waste of this process? Carl? Uh-oh, I think I lost Carl. Uh-oh. Okay, well, that's the vagaries of modern technology. Well, okay, what I'm going to do then is I mentioned off the top that David Rovics was here in Victoria over the weekend, and he played for a gathering down at a vigil and demonstration for the victims of Israel's latest Gaza bombing campaign. It was organized before the truce was announced, although truce, what truce? But so while he was down there, he played a little bit of stuff. So I'm going to play a little bit of that, and I'm going to try reconnect with Carl in the meantime. So have a listen to this.
Happy again last night, happens every time I play. When the gig is over, someone has to say a question that appears to be on everybody's brains as they're driving down the highway in the commuter lanes. It sure is not just me, it's the 99% of artists who are wondering about the thousands they just spent on a CD that will never make it to the air. What I'd really like to know, why don't they play you on the radio? Why don't they play you on the radio? Perhaps my songs are too cerebral, they don't make you dance. My melodies are boring, there's no spandex in my pants. Maybe it's because I don't use drum machine.
Dave, and I'll play more of that song later as we're ad-libbing. Now, Carl, I got you back again. Did you hear any of my question, or do I have to go through the...
No, I didn't. I'm so sorry, but it shows the perils of technology.
Okay, yeah, really.
However, there's no radium involved in phone systems, fortunately.
Not yet. Well,
screw up and break down, but there are... more serious problems, obviously, involving fracking.
Well, what could possibly go wrong? Well, what I was asking in a roundabout way, but I'll make it more to the point here, is that why doesn't the EPA demand of the industry that there be an end point, like an end point destination for the waste being created and this radioactive waste specifically?
Well, I once wrote a book, this is a number of years ago, called The Poison Conspiracy. It's still around. You can get a copy through Amazon, folks, up your way. What we have, since the Fukushima nuclear disaster, they speak about captured regulators. And in the United States, we have plenty of that, mm-hmm. Captured regulators, agencies that are supposed to protect us from poison. Just don't do their job. They're all tied into those who are doing the poisoning. That includes, even now under President Obama, the EPA. I mean, I wrote the book when Ronald Reagan became president, and it was so obvious the foxes were guarding the hen house, the chicken coop. I mean, he took people from some of the biggest polluting corporations in America and gave them top positions in EPA and OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and so forth and so on. And the situation perhaps isn't as explicit now as it was then, but it remains the same. What you have in the U.S. are agencies that are supposed to be protecting lives doing the bidding of big corporate interests. And this is on the federal level, on the state level, often on the local level. And in fact, in the book, I get into the international level, which, I mean, this is another show, which continues these days with the World Health Organization in the forefront, covering up the consequences of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster.
Yeah, with their friends in the press. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Gorilla Radio on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, cfuv.uvic.ca on the internet, everywhere else. I'm speaking tonight with Carl Grossman, and Carl is a multi-award-winning veteran journalist specializing in investigative reporting, and he also teaches that very that dying art at State University of New York SUNY College at Old Westbury. He's the author of several books, including Weapons in Space, The Wrong Stuff, The Space Program's Nuclear Threat to Our Planet, and Power Crazy is Lilco Turning Shoreham into America's Chernobyl and Cover Up, What You're Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power. Well, Carl, we're fast running out of time, but I know in New York State there's been massive pushback against going into the Marcellus Shale to frack. There was a moratorium put on it by your outgoing governor, now Cuomo, the son of Cuomo, the former mayor, is now governor. And he's talking about, well, he's putting up balloons in New York State about bringing taking the moratorium down. What's the situation? Is it possible that he's going to do that? And how do New Yorkers feel about that?
I think lots of New Yorkers are very, very extremely upset. I mean, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, which is among the captured regulatory bodies in regards to fracking. It issued, this is last year, an environmental impact statement, kind of dismissing, including the radioactive issue, dismissing the problems. Well, there was 80,000 comments to that environmental impact statement, 10-1 against. And the governor that you mentioned who put a moratorium on fracking, that was a guy named David Patterson, and he had some good sense. Now Cuomo has flown a trial balloon suggesting that he would allow fracking. See, a lot of this horizontal fracking has already been occurring in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. which borders New York State. And Cuomo first said that he maybe would allow some fracking along the Pennsylvania border, but then he kind of like backed down on that. And the latest from Cuomo is that he would like to see a health study done on fracking. The problem is that the anti-fracking folk said, yeah, let's do a health study. Let's get like the fellow who did the report for grassroots environmental education, independent people, let them do. But instead what Cuomo did was to allow the State Department of Health to do the, he assigned them to do the study. And it remains to be seen whether it will be a good study, a proper study, and so forth. I mean, the bottom line to me, I think, on this, because it's so well parallels the situation in regards to uranium in Navajo Nation, which covers chunks of New Mexico, Arizona, a good part of the Southwest. In the 1940s, during the Manhattan Project to build an atomic bomb, the Navajos, because there was a lot of uranium on their land, were gotten to do mining of uranium. Not told that mining uranium, I mean, it's an enormous cancer, as lung cancer, has become epidemic in the Navajo Nation, and the piles of nuclear waste have spread disease and death through the Navajo Nation. And 2005, uranium mining was at long last banned on the Navajo Nation, and they gave a name, the Navajos, to this uranium. They call it the Yellow Monster, and say that we should keep this in the ground where it's not going to hurt anybody. I think that the bottom line here is this white, silvery monster. That's what radium looks like in solid form. It, too, should be left in the ground where it's not going to hurt anybody and not unleashed through fracking to cause disease and death year after year, generation after generation. What an outrage.
Well, it's insane, and I don't know if we can find a way that some of these operators can make money by leaving things buried, leaving Pandora's box underground. Maybe we'd have a hope, but in the meantime, money seems to be the god of the modern day. Well, Carl Grossman, thanks a lot for joining us and bringing us up to date with this. As you said, this is a real huge issue in British Columbia, the fracking issue, and it's not being covered by our press at all, so anything we can get from abroad is welcome. Thanks a lot, Carl, for coming on the show.
A pleasure.
All right, then. Now I'm going to take a brief break, and when I come back, I'm going to be joined by Janine, and she's going to bring us up to speed to stuff a little closer to home and maybe a little bit further away as well. So do stick around for that. Hello, welcome back to CFUV 101.9. This is Guerrilla Radio, and I'm speaking now with the publisher of the Victoria Street News and CFUV radio broadcaster in her own right, Janine Bancroft. Hey, Janine, how's it going?
Hey, I have to admit that I did not hear every single word of that, but I'm wondering if you guys talked about the film Gasland. Have you seen that?
I have seen it. I made mention to it, but we didn't, you know, go into any detail about it, yeah.
Yeah, I really recommend it. It's on Netflix. It's very eye-opening about the impacts of that. So we need to figure something else out, that's for sure.
And really well made, too.
Oh, yeah, it's a local guy whose backyard was being impacted by fracking, basically, and he just went on an adventure trying to figure out what was going on, and I think he released the first images of the water catching on fire out of people's taps. It was shocking.
Amazing.
Yeah. So David Rovics was in town yesterday. Sadly, he didn't make it for his concert, but I think that Randy is attempting to have him back in early December. You went to the rally yesterday, hey?
Yeah, well, we had such a fun day, you know, because I was trying to work up an interview with David, you know, like I was going to do a stand-up with him, you know, before his concert. Well, he had ferry problems, it didn't make the concert. So we were emailing back and forth, and we decided on a brunch, and then it had this huge brunch down at the Rebar there, and with his in-laws and his wife and a bunch of activists from Victoria, Kevin Nish and Judy and Randy, you know, from the Cuba outfit that they had arranged the concert, and then you and me and other friends. It was great fun. And then someone said, "Oh, are you going to go to the Gaza thing?" And I'd forgotten about it, I guess, because when I heard the truce thing, it just went out of my mind. And so we just walked right, it was right there around the corner, as it turns out, and David performed with Randy's PA, and it was terrific.
All right, yeah.
And I recorded it. I recorded it, too, so you can go to Guerrilla Radio, to the Guerrilla Radio tab at my website, pacificfreepress.com, and you can hear the speechifying and David performing there.
That's awesome. And did his performing, did other people stop to listen as well?
Yes, some did. Yeah, I was having visions of, you know, remember when the Beatles were on the roof of the...
Right.
It was kind of almost like that.
Well, it's true. You know, I said to my friends, like, if this was the 60s or the 70s, before they figured out the power of music, of revolutionary music, you know, when people like Joan Baez and Bob Dylan and these people were on the radio, you know, David and folks like him would be on the radio, but it's an underground movement, I guess, at this point. So tomorrow, anyways, he's gone to Vancouver with the family and the in-laws, and tomorrow is the the 29th. 29th is Thursday, is the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. And, of course, those of us who've been following this and listening to Guerrilla Radio all these years know that a ceasefire is only a temporary measure unless there's some real solution in that part of the world, some real justice. So there's an International Day of Solidarity on Thursday, and Craig and Cindy Corey, who are the parents of Rachel right. Corey, who was murdered by an Israeli bulldozer because she dared stand in front of a Palestinian's home that was going to be bulldozed, one of many. This goes on daily, as far as I understand. Anyways, her parents are going to be in town, and as you know, Chris, they launched a lawsuit against the Israeli government because of the mm-hmm. murder of her of their child, and it was a rather disappointing outcome. But they're going to be speaking about all of that, and David is going to be performing on Thursday at the downtown Harbor Center SFU building starting at 7 o'clock. And also, if people want more information about Palestine, your show is a good source, but also Voice of Palestine right. has an interview with Cindy and Craig Corey, and also Kevin Nisch, who's just come back from giving testimony at the historic Mavi Marmara trial in Turkey after being on that ship that was sailing in international waters that was shot on by the Israelis. So voiceofpalestine.ca is a good place. And then this week, Chris, is another of these Let's All Fly Around the World and Pretend We Care About Climate Change conferences. You know, I mean, when you start looking at this, the Kyoto
You're not getting
protocol,
jaded, are you?
Well, no. Oh, no. After 20 years of this? Are you kidding? The Kyoto Protocol was adopted in 1997. You may recall we were all excited. Oh, yes, there's finally a document, and these nations are going to actually do something. And then here we are, you know, all these years later, and nothing's really changed. In fact, things are getting worse. And these global sort of leaders, I guess, for lack of a better word, they hold these annual conferences, Conference of the Parties, it's called, or COP18 is the current one, mm-hmm. and it's happening in Doha in Qatar. And, you know, I think it's just a chance for them to get together and schmooze and talk about how they're probably, like, drinking martinis and yeah. laughing about how they're pulling the wool over everybody's eyes.
Well,
right?
It's a party, man. Come on.
Right.
Well,
party,
and can you imagine a better place? I mean, you know, maybe Kananaskis in Alberta country, but I mean, Qatar, you know, I mean, you know, they're really invested in stopping fossil fuels,
right,
that's for sure.
Right, right, right. They're the leaders, yeah. So, you know, not to be racist, not trying to be racist or anything, but it's the elite, right, doing what the elite do. And also, of course, that what goes alongside with that are the activists. And apparently there's some PowerShift 2012 delegates going to be there. These are the young folk that are young and enthusiastic and hopeful, like we used to be.
Before,
you may recall.
Before we smarten up.
Oh, just, you get beat up enough times, right? And anyways, they're going to be doing what they can to try to keep people's minds wrapped around the People's Agreement of Cochabamba, which came out of the April 2010 gathering of 20,000 plus activists in Bolivia. So there are these wonderful
Brazil.
Documents. And
Cochabamba is in Brazil.
Oh, I think it was Bolivia. But we can talk about that later. Wherever it was a wonderful document. And so there are things that we can do, Chris, even if we're jaded and disgruntled about the process. Tonight, Eagles, Ancient Forests, and Elections is a silent auction fundraiser and info night being held at the Ambrosia Center. It's hosted by the Ancient Forests Alliance with Ken Wu, T.J. Watt, and Joan Varley. And Hannah Carpendale, who I don't know. And anyways, they are having presentations about the world's largest eagle congregating area, a history of BC's bald eagles, some of BC's endangered ancient forests. So there's no doubt going to be all kinds of great slideshows and chances to meet other activists, and there's a silent auction fundraiser. So it's $5 to $20. He's also put a note in that there's a special good news announcement. So,
where is that again?
So at the Ambrosia Center, 638 Fiskard.
Fiskard, okay.
Fiskard, right, near the Chinese school there.
All right, okay, the Benevolent right. Society, yeah. Chinese Benevolent Society, on just south of Douglas Street.
Right. Yeah. Well, east of Douglas. East of Douglas. 7 till 9 p.m. and $5 to $20.
It's not east of Douglas. Come on. Are you going to start arguing with
me? Well, Douglas runs north-south.
Well, then it's west of Douglas.
Oh, sorry. Yes. No. Yeah, west. Right. That's right. West of Douglas. Sorry. Okay. All right. Another thing we can do is participate in the Global Day of Action on November 27th in solidarity with the Eunice Toten, who you probably heard evicted pipeline surveyor.
Well, hey, I saw the video. Wow. And I put it up at Guerrilla Radio Blog.blogspot, the video of these guys in the middle of the night. There's these guys, these surveyor guys. And all of a sudden, you know, some of the local boys say, hey, what the hell are you doing? And they're like, oh, nothing.
I mean, I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah. Well, go to Guerrilla Radio Blogspot, and you'll see that these guys, you know, and the dudes up there are saying, look, now we're only going to tell you this once, right? So if you got, and they scared the hell out of these guys, and rightly so. And what are they doing? You know, sneaking around in the middle of the night, putting up surveyor's tape. You know, I mean, come on.
Right, anyway. Really, yeah. Well, and these guys are from Can-Am Geomatics, I guess, for Apache, who are building the, what a name, Apache, right? Mm-hmm. And they're building the Pacific Trail's natural gas pipeline, or trying to. So, they closed the gate, and they say they're against all pipelines slated to cross their traditional territories, mm-hmm. which includes the gas pipelines. And they've had this camp up there since 2010. So there's, mm-hmm. they've asked for solidarity and support actions. And there's, you'd be really happy to hear, in Vancouver at noon at Apache offices on November 27th, that's 200 Burrard Street. In Victoria at noon at the Royal Bank main branch, because they're heavily invested in it. And then there's actually actions all over the place, in Trinidad, in Chico, California, and then all over in Canada, Edmonton, Hamilton, Kamloops, Montreal, Ottawa, Prince George, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the 27th. And then upcoming in December, Kinder Morgan, who are the tar sands pipeline people, they're going to have these open houses, which they try to do to, you know, whatever, pretend that they care about public opinion. And I did not realize Kinder Morgan was previously, the pipeline, the Kinder Morgan pipeline, which goes from Fort McMurray through Vancouver, and then there's tankers that actually leave Vancouver and go out past Victoria, mm-hmm. out over to Asia, I guess, and that was built by a provincial, like a crown corporation, right?
Oh, I didn't know that, but okay.
I didn't either, yeah, that's my understanding. And then it was bought up by these Texas millionaires. So, you know, it's another example of the public paying for something, in this case not a good thing, but, and then somebody coming and buying it and then reaping all the benefits of it. So that's coming up in December. And just one happy thing to end on, Chris. Transition Victoria, you know, they've had this fantastic Flax program, and Denise, our neighbor Denise, who passed away, she was really enthusiastic about it and helped initiate it. And they've had a really good harvest, it sounds like, and they're going to be spinning the flax that they grew into linen, and they're going to be doing that at the Dickens Fair on Saturday, December 1st from 2 till 8, and that's at the James Bay Community Center on Oswego Street.
Well, and these transitions, guys, it's like, you know, trying to find a new way of, you know, transitioning away from our current way of life, and it's a big movement. Transition towns. It's a big movement all over North America and beyond as well. Well, okay, Janine. Well, your program, Winds of Change, alternating Thursdays with Medi's Winds Hidden News, Thursday mornings at 11 a.m. And the December Street News is out, and the calendars are with it. Or did you sell out the calendars?
No, there's still calendars. They're beautiful calendars from Vancouver that celebrate the community in the downtown east side, our cousins over in Vancouver.
Okay, Janine. Well, thanks a lot then for coming out again, and we'll talk to you the next time, eh?
Okay. Thank you, Chris.
All right, then. Bye-bye. Now I'm going to take another brief break, but when I come back, I'll be joined by David Rovix, and he's going to bring us up to speed with a few things, and we'll talk about some of the fun things we're going on and music and everything else. So stick around for that. This is something from him, too.
Fifty heads of state came to threaten and to boast, to articulate their message and together make a toast to the new schemes they're hatching, to the next regime they'll change, to the next nation they'll turn into a bombing range. They hyped it on the radio, newspapers and TV, the anarchists who come and destroy the city. The anarchists who come and the undercover cops, the old Chicago Red Squad and their psyops. It's the cops who bought the petrol, the cops who bought the cans, the cops who brought it home, the cops who made the plan, so they got the terrorists they wanted. Now they're doing fine, they got the terrorists and they got the headlines. I want to know dead, wiped out in their sleep. songs of all description, but if you drive from Florida to the city of Chicago to pay a little visit to Mayor Rambo, watch out for the cops who bring home the gasoline and your apartment becomes a crime scene. I want to know who, I want to know who,
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 who is the terrorist?
Want to know who,
who,
want to know who,
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 who is the terrorist?
Meanwhile in Afghanistan, a village has been hit, a wedding party transformed into a pit, transformed into a graveyard for children, women, men, transformed into a graveyard for empire again, a place where terrorists are born with every drone attack, a graveyard for the Midwest boys never coming back, a graveyard for society, a graveyard for ideals, a place to bury all the hearts of anyone who feels them. At the meeting in Chicago, they'll talk of women's rights, they'll talk about the terrorists they've got within their sights.
Yeah, welcome back to Guerrilla Radio, CFUV 101.9 FM, CFUV.uvic.ca on the internet, everywhere else. There behind me is a new song, Meanwhile in Afghanistan. That's a title track off of David Rovick's new album, Meanwhile in Afghanistan, a folk punk manifesto in 12 parts featuring Tom Morello, Nick Angelo and friends. Well, you know, throughout the terrible years since that day that changed everything, a question posed is, like, where are the protest songs of our times? With this last year and some odd proving the most restive period in the world since the late 1960s, seeing popular movements rising throughout Europe, the Middle East, and even right here in North America, again, that oft asked yet seldom answered musical question is asked, but maybe today we can respond. Following the folk tradition of such American greats as Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, and Phil Oakes, David Rovick's has spent thousands of days gigging venues small and not so much so across the United States, Canada, and abroad. He's been a stalwart of the nascent Occupy movement, ringing out his prolific catalog of songs affirming peace, justice, and humanity, while never fearing to spotlight and excoriate the real evildoers of our times. He's also proven a popular pioneer of digital dissent, providing his 200-plus retinue of socially relevant songs for free to the masses through his website, davidrovics.com. Well, welcome to the program, David, or welcome back to the program, I guess I should say.
Thank you very much.
Glad to be back. Well, it's my pleasure. You know, Dave, I was looking at my records, and it was 2002 was the last time we spoke on this show, if my record-keeping is correct. So, and that's when the boorish border guards at the Canada side, they refused to let you play a gig up here at Kananaskis, Alberta, for the G20. They don't let this guy into the great frightened north, for heaven's sakes. Well, Dave, you wrote this really long essay, and you posited a great question that I just reiterated somewhat, but you put it in a more complex way. But in this lengthy open letter to Democracy Now!'s producer, Democracy Now! Heard here at CFUV Monday to Friday at 12 noon, and it's called Music Matters, and you ask them, hey, you know, what gives with the playlist policy that they have on the show? Now, I listened to their show today and listened especially to the music break, and they played like a world music instrumental, what was it called? Don't Lose Your Mind by a guy named Omar Hayret, who I've never heard of. Is that not good enough, or why do you think they can do better than that, David?
Oh, that's, I always like it when they play obscure world music stuff or any number of other things. It's not that they never play the music, but the more independent music. But it's that there's a very little consistency in their policy in terms of what music they play in their breaks. And in the past couple years, it's been from when I've spent a month keeping track, because I listen to the show anyway, so it's not hard to do. Keeping track of what they're playing, it works out to on the average day. During the times I've monitored this, and I think it's true generally for the past couple of years, the majority of the music breaks are artists who have sold more than a million records. And that is a very, very small minority of the people out there that they could be choosing from currently and historically, that they could be playing the music breaks. And actually, you know, it's the best music out there for the purpose of their music breaks were stuff that sold more than a million records and was recorded usually 40 or 50 years ago, which is, you know, a lot of what they've been playing, then I would say, you know, play it. But I think the fact is there's a lot of current independent music, and I'm not just talking about me, but lots and lots of other bands and songwriters out there that they could be playing, and that would be much more effective to illustrate the stories that they're talking about, you know, to really drive the point home, you know, to shine the light on the story in a different way, in a musical way. You know, that's important, and that has an impact, and tend to ignore that, of course, for probably good reason, because they're distracted with creating the rest of the program, which, of course, is mostly not music, and that's understandable, except that actually that 1 or 2 minutes of each program that are heard by, you know, 1,000 different radio stations, listeners, and, you know, who knows how many people every day, it really actually has a huge impact, not only on people, because the music has an impact on people, but also if they play contemporary musicians, it's going to have an impact on the movement generally, and on the careers of these musicians, which will then in turn have an impact on their audiences, you know. So it's a really potentially useful thing for a lot of people, not just musicians, but all sorts of other people, if they would actually really have a policy of focusing mainly on playing independent contemporary musicians. That would be the best thing for them to do in a lot of ways. And that, a lot of people think so, and nobody bothers saying anything about it because it seems like a minor point. But being a musician, I felt like I had to say something about it, especially being one of the few independent musicians that has gotten a lot of airplay on Democracy Now! Over the years compared to other independent musicians. So I can say from first-hand experience that it has a huge impact on your, you know, on your reality as a working musician if you get played even occasionally on Democracy Now!
Well, the power of music. I mean, today, you know, you hear whenever a musician or an actor or somebody makes some kind of political statement, you know, the whole world comes down on them at once. Oh, who the hell are you to be saying this, that, or the other thing? You know, you're just an actor, or you're just a songwriter, or just a singer, or an entertainer. You've got no place. But when I'm old enough to remember the 60s and the 70s, and music was huge, and throughout the 70s, when music sort of, when FM came in, and for those of you youngsters who don't remember, but, I mean, FM was kind of like the internet of its day, you know, AM radio controlled everything, and it was all 3-minute songs that, you know, were about cars and girls, and FM sort of took it in a new direction where a lot of these songs did get played, a lot of the protest songs, and if you look at some movie today about the 60s, they'll play some, you know, seminal protest song, and immediately you know it's a shorthand. You're right there. You know what this is, what this attitude and what the environment of the moment was about. But then somehow that changed. FM got taken over, and music, you know, wasn't politically relevant anymore. Do you know what I mean, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not that the music stopped being politically relevant. People still have been writing that stuff since the 60s. But the difference between the 60s and 70s and the 80s and up to the present is that in 1980, and particularly in the U.S., the line there was 1980 when Reagan came to power, and one of the first things he did was deregulate the airwaves, and then Clinton later deregulated it even much more. But Reagan really, you know, his administration in the U.S. really destroyed independent radio, you know, through their legislation, you know, because, of course, when there were laws against anybody owning more than one radio station, which is a very sensible law, you know, for a democratic society, you know, when that law went away, then, of course, Clear Channel and other corporations jumped at the opportunity to buy dozens of stations each, and I think Clear Channel now owns more than 1,000. And so then it not only political music went out the window, but really any kind of independent music went out the window. All these, in the 60s and 70s, these independent FM stations, I mean, they were mostly commercial stations, but, you know, as you remember, they were run by people who liked music, and people programmed who could control the programming locally, which now, you know, at the time would be a ridiculous thing to say, like the programmers controlled the programming, mm-hmm. you know, but now this is such an unusual thing in radio for programmers to control programming that it sounds like, you know, you're talking about some idyllic kind of world where, you know, people who like music have music shows and decide what they play on their shows, you know, but that's really the exception rather than the rule. So now you have a situation where on the average Clear Channel station, 300 songs are rotated constantly ad nauseum 24 hours a day, and that is the extent of variety on the average Clear Channel station. 300 songs and out of all the millions and millions of songs out there.
And they're robots, too, right? They've got these logarithms that say, okay, well, this tempo would be good next to this tempo. And, you know, and so, you know, the DJ just goes in there and reads the weather, or maybe even doesn't do that with Clear Channel because, you know, he's in some other city than you. And then the robot takes over, right?
Yeah, you'll have, like, one person who is responsible for being the voice of, like, six different radio stations, and they'll basically just say the names of the artists that were just played, and half the time that's not even done live either. You know, it's just, I mean, much of the time there's nobody in one of those Clear Channel stations, which is even actually against the law, but mm-hmm. they frequently break the law. You know, they have to have somebody in there at least for emergency announcements and stuff like that. But it's happened in the past that stations have been just, you know, multiple stations at a time in an area where there was an emergency that needed to be announced about that nobody was at station to run the announcement.
Yeah, lights on.
I mean, it's just, yeah, there's no, I mean, the radio is, you know, in that sense, I mean, commercial radio is just completely dead in the U.S. and it's been just terrible for independent musicians. I mean, it used to be that actually the U.S. Compared to many other countries was a real cultural mecca because of independent FM radio, and you know, that all changed. I mean, you know, the state broadcasters now in places like Canada and Britain and elsewhere are all we got left, you know, whereas before you would look at a lot of the state broadcasters like BBC and CBC as being kind of dull and boring, and now, you know, they seem very exciting compared to anything commercial radio offers.
I can't properly comment on this because I haven't listened to the commercial radio stations, I mean, for a dozen years or something. I mean, I hate the commercials and the music. I don't know, it might be good, but I couldn't tell you. We had the big football game up here yesterday, you know, it's our Grey Cup, which is sort of like the Super Bowl in American terms, and they had five Canadian acts play, and Justin Bieber was one of them, so I knew who he was just because of all the hype, and Gordon Lightfoot, of course, you know, all us old people over a certain age know who he is, but the other three acts, I didn't I didn't have a clue who they were, you know, and they came up and just danced around, and it certainly wasn't political, except for Gordon's. Gordon's was a bit of a political song, it had a bit of an edge to it, but you know, I wouldn't even know. I don't listen to them anymore. But you can't forget the college scene. I mean, is the college scene a place where you can get played down there, David? Or is it the only place that you and guys? Well, I mean, you and Tom Morello are sort of Annie DeFranco and that. You're pretty high visibility in that world. But do the other guys get played on the college campuses down there?
Well, I mean, yeah, certainly that can be a real avenue for getting some exposure if you really push it with college radio stations. I mean, that still is left. But that's, you know, most of the stations, really, community stations and college stations, most of them, not all, there's some fantastic exceptions, but most of them are, it's really very eclectic programming that alienates the average listener. So it's, you know, it's great to have community radio, and it's great for regular folks to have access to the airwaves and create programming, but there's also something to be said for some kind of consistency so that people who like different kinds of music or are interested in different programming know what's going to happen on the radio station when they tune in. So a lot of the college stations, it's not like that at all. But, you know, so I think it's not a replacement for the independent airwaves that we lost in 1980, but of course there are still college stations, and more importantly, there's also the internet, which, you know, is how most independent musicians get any kind of exposure, I'd say, these days. And I would just add that in terms of, like, you know, these acts, that the big major label acts that sell millions of records, I am not and would never say that they're no good, I mean, at all. That's not at all my point, you know, and not that anyone has accused me of it, but just I just want to be clear that there are some fantastic artists out there, contemporary artists, who are lucky enough or talented enough or some combination thereof to millions of records. It's and that's not the problem. The problem is that the system is set up so that there's only going to be at any given time a few hundred people in that position, mm-hmm. you know, who are selling records like that and getting airplay like that. And that is just about profit. It has nothing to do with music, nothing to do with, you know, people want a wide variety of music, you know, and that's not what's made available because it's more profitable to limit the music that's out there and focus on the acts that are superstars that you know you can sell. You know, just the way with Hollywood, they always want to do a sequel to every movie that sells mm-hmm. anything. It's the same with the music business.
Well, find a safe bet and put everything on it. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, cfuv.uvic.ca, across the world on the internet. I'm speaking tonight with musician extraordinaire, politico, David Rovics. You can go to his site, davidrovics.com, to find more of his stuff. You know, when David, you talk about these big acts, and I want to bring it around to the politics of things. I remember the Dixie Chicks were a big act, and then the minute they did something political during the Bush time, all of a sudden they found they couldn't get any airtime either for a while there. I mean, is it possible to sit on the heights in the music industry and be political at the same time without somebody, you know, hewing the tree beneath you?
Well, actually, the Dixie Chicks are a great example that it is possible to do that because they actually did. They got a lot of negative publicity and they got a lot of hate mail and maybe even death threats and stuff. But actually, they didn't lose listeners. They gained listeners from their taking a stand. And they even were not ever officially alienated from the country music scene, as far as I know, because I think it was only like less than a year after their denouncing Bush and his policies that they won a major country music award. So, I mean, it's definitely possible. Once you're selling millions of records, you can then take a political stand and still continue to sell millions of records. It's just that if you're not yet selling millions of records and you try to be political, well, that'll guarantee that you're never going to get a major record contract in most cases. But it's not so much about the political music as much as it's about independent music generally. You know, I mean, it's and anything that doesn't fit in a certain musical box. I mean, of course, these things can change over time. Though, you know, once there's some band that's really popular that seems to be playing in what they might call a new style, then they'll start a whole radio station, series of radio stations that are, you know, focusing on that style. But generally, at any given time, you know, you have to fit in a certain musical box, and the measurements for that box are very strict. And, you know, if you're a little too country for AAA or a little too AAA for country, you're not going to get anywhere with any kind of commercial airplay, you know, or even, you know, airplay on sort of nonprofit AAA type stations. I mean, it's very, very strict and very expensive to try to get any kind of airplay for a lot of artists, for most artists.
Well, David, I know that you've got your latest album, Meanwhile in Afghanistan. You're putting that out, and I'd like to talk about your alternative approach to marketing and giving music away. The whole music industry has changed so much in the last few years, but sadly, we're right out of time. So you're gonna have to come back, and we'll talk more about the industry and politics and where those two intersect another time, eh?
Absolutely, I hope so. And for those of you in BC, I'm coming back to Vancouver and Victoria in a few days. And the Victoria gig has just been confirmed for Saturday.
This coming Saturday?
The one that I missed before. yeah, the one I missed because of missing the ferry. It's now going to happen at the same place, same time on Saturday.
BCGEU, 7 o'clock this Saturday. Okay, David, well, I look forward to seeing you then, and I'll play you out with some of your own work, and thanks a lot for coming on.
All right, thanks a lot. All right. Take care, Mr. Cook.
All right, then, bye-bye. Now, and I want to also thank Carl Grossman and Janine and everybody that makes things happen up here week in and week out. I want to remind you to stick around on this frosty winter night for jazz with Arnold and Rhythmie. Until the next time, that's all I got this time.
I'm sure there's an exception to each and every rule, but perhaps I'm too political and not a useful tool to keep the music in the background and the commercial.